You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Jane, I'm saying this because I'm really not quite sure. I'm a little encouraged about what they were able to do against the Royals. So when anybody's able to win a series against the Royals, the world champions, it's a good thing. They took 2 of 3. They won some close games. It was the first series win against Kansas City since 2013. So that had to have given the team a little bit of a lift, I would think.
Yeah, it definitely did. I think that was kind of much needed, especially coming at home where, up to that series, they had only won one game at home. And I know that Bob Melvin especially takes pride in playing well at home in front of those fans. So some good things to take from it. They also only scored, I believe, 8 runs in those 3 games. And still, the good news is, of course, they still won the series, but it really speaks to their offense right now. The offense just hasn't been able to get going up to this point. And this was seen as kind of I think they were cautiously optimistic that this was going to be an area of strength for them. They really liked the depth of the lineup, the way they can mix and match with so many versatile guys. But at this point, it just seemed like up and down, everyone's been struggling. And it's also tough for Melvin to get guys consistent playing time. And I think especially at the beginning of the season, they really need that consistent playing time, those consistent at-bats to get going. And it's just not happening. And I know it's frustrating for everyone involved. You know, Melvin has to keep everyone involved, everyone current, but, matchups play into it. They have another long string of right-handers coming up. So that means it's tough for guys like Mark Canna, Billy Butler, and then the Coco Crisp, Billy Burns dynamic, choosing between those two every day. There's just a lot of tough decisions, and I think it's just hard to get this offense going when you can't really run out the same lineup every day. So that's something they're still trying to figure out. But on the plus end, you score 8 runs in a series and still win it, that means your pitching is doing pretty well. And that is something that has been there for them pretty much the whole season so far, particularly the bullpen starters. Some of the starters are still struggling to give them as many innings as they need, really, but the bullpen's just kind of been there to pick up the slack every day, it seems like, and they've been really good throughout. So I think that, especially after last season, the way things went for the bullpen, that's extremely encouraging. And I think it's good to see, you have that, and you have potential with the offense. It's there. It just hasn't shown up in games yet. So if they can get the offense going, this could end up being a well-rounded team. It's just kind of, getting everything to start working at the same time.
Yeah, and we don't want to make too much out of so few games that have been played, but at the same time, to have played so poorly at home, like you said, to be able to pull out a couple wins against the Royals. I mean, they don't want to wait. At the end of the season, we can look at a team that wins a division, and they play, 10, 15 games over 500 at home. They're around 500 on the road, and then it evens out to, having a pretty nice season. So,
yeah, and especially, the way things work now, too, if you can just kind of hang in there, with that second wild card, I think it really just kind of changes things for everyone.
Yeah. They definitely don't just want to try to have to scramble at the end, and you have to take advantage of your home field. So that was good to see them do that. Let me see what else. Oh, it's Jesse Hahn. What are we making of this? So we suspect that he's probably going to get a call-up soon. He hasn't been called up yet, right?
No, he hasn't. I would suspect by the end of the month. I spoke with him yesterday for the first time since spring, actually. When he was sent down to AAA, he left before anyone could talk to him. So it was good just to kind of see where he was at. We see the numbers. The numbers are really good. But to see where he is just, not only mentally, but how he's feeling about everything. And he's in a really good place. I think, he admitted to the fact that just the change of scenery, getting out of Arizona, it was such a tough spring for a lot of pitchers there. It was even drier than normal. And it's just a tough area to pitch, especially for guys like Jesse that rely on their breaking stuff so much. And he said all that kind of back into form. He's really changed nothing. It's just, you know, he's trying to keep the ball down. His breaking stuff is breaking again. His curveball is back to where it usually is. And he's been able to work on a changeup, too, while he's been down there. So he starts again tonight. And this, of course, is the same day that Derek Sercamp pulled for the A's. And so far, Sercamp has been struggling to give them innings. So this could be an interesting dynamic tonight to see how both pitch. Jesse's pitching in Colorado Springs for the Sounds, and then Sercamp's obviously here against the Yankees. So I really wouldn't be surprised if, you know, one more mediocre outing for Sercamp, you know, is enough to convince the A's it's time to get Jesse back. Because Jesse, I mean, last year he was considered, you know, one of the more promising young starters in the game. And really going into spring was expected to, you know, be a big piece for them in their rotation. So I definitely see him still being that. And, you know, he said yesterday he still envisions it too. You know, when he says we, he thinks of himself as being a part of this rotation. And I think once we see him back, I could see him doing really well. So I would say before the end of the month, you know, perhaps as soon as, you know, the end of this week or early next week.
PR, I want to talk about the kind of humorous thing that happened during the game last night. Rangers were playing the Astros, and I believe it was Elvis Andrews thought he had a home run. And it turned out that it wasn't, but he started doing his home run trot. And in the dugout after he scored, Adrian Beltre didn't look real happy with him. So it was kind of a humorous thing, but it was also sort of sent a little bit of a message also, just kind of, you know, what kind of leader Adrian Beltre is. So what is the dynamic between those players, and what all happened with that?
They're both nuts. I mean, Beltre's going to get on Elvis Andrews every chance he gets. So that just gave him another opportunity to just get all over him, because Andrews torments Beltre. So they go back and forth each other. Last night was the latest episode. So, you know, Andrews hit a ball that looked like it was a home run. It was a double. He got a double. It was no big deal. But he gave Beltre a chance to just get all over him. So he's not going to let that pass up.
Yeah, you call him his best friend and his arch nemesis. Honestly, I sort of was like in and out watching the game last night, and when I saw that exchange, I thought maybe someone had touched Beltre's head. He looked really mad.
That would be a serious capital offense, punishable by murder or by execution. But I don't think that happened last night.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, I mean, the good thing that came out of it was everyone was talking about, oh, Beltre's a great leader, and of course, you know, everyone likes him anyway. And regardless of whether it was just like a nothing thing between them, I mean, you know, the message was sent that you should probably.
Beltre can goof off as much as anybody. Beltre does enough nutty stuff on his own, although you would never catch him jogging out of the batter's box. But Beltre certainly is not afraid to do something goofy on the field either. Like last week, he was arguing with an umpire about a foul ball that bounced out of the stands, and he was insisting it was an out because it hit off the fan's head. So, you know, go figure.
Oh, goodness. Okay. Well, let's move on. So let's talk about Derek Holland's outing. It was, you know, I wasn't impressed with either one of these guys, with Feldman or Holland, but Holland did say he got stronger as he went on. He did manage to put in however many innings. What was your sort of impression of him early and later, and did you buy that he was getting stronger?
Well, yeah, because he had like 6 or 7 days off because of the rainouts and the off day and stuff like that. So he was working on, I can't remember, 6 or 7 days rest, but it was a couple of days extra rest. And when you do that, Allison, your command is not very good. That's one thing Nolan Ryan told me, that the longer you go between starts, the less command you have. And I think you saw that last night with Holland as he was struggling early, trying to get the ball where he wanted. And I think once he got a couple innings under him, he was able to get a little better command and get through his innings. So I think that was probably a contributing factor right there. You know, everybody lays an egg once in a while as a pitcher, and that certainly wasn't an egg for Derek. He was the winning pitcher, but I think you just saw a little bit of the layoff affect him.
The Rangers have won 8 straight games at home versus the Astros. Of course, that dates back to last season. What do you think about that? Can it get into a team's head either way? Does it mean anything? Are the Rangers aware of that? You know, when it comes to just this early in the season, obviously it's the first game these two teams are playing there. Does that mean anything to have this kind of home winning streak?
Not if Dallas Keuchel's on the mound, which he'll be on Thursday. That's a pretty good way to break a losing streak. I mean, you know, 2 years ago the Astros, I think, won 17 out of 19 over the Rangers. Now the Rangers have kind of reversed that. We've seen that in this division, and I'm sure other divisions too, where, you know, one team will dominate for a while and then they'll switch it around. A lot of it has to do with getting the right starting pitcher on the mound. You know, the Rangers just beat up Scott Feldman a little bit last night and got to their bullpen. But what the Astros need is, you know, a couple of good starting outings from their starters like Doug Fister and Dallas Keuchel, and, you know, they right the ship. That's why you have those big number one starters like Cole Hamels to break those losing streaks.
Yeah, I'm starting to, I know it's really early, really, really early, but just judging from, I don't know, the rotations, I just feel like the Rangers are definitely have the advantage so far. But,
well, I thought the Rangers' rotation would be better than people expected because of, you know, the past success that they've had. The big thing with them, Allison, is they were all, a lot of them were coming off injury. You know, Martin Perez had the Tommy John. Holland had, you know, a couple of different things. You know, Colby Lewis has, you know, gone through one hurricane after another and come out on the other side and pitched pretty well. A.J. Griffin's been out 2 years, but he was a pretty good pitcher in 2013. So, you know, I kind of thought the Rangers were going to have a very good starting pitching staff. The big thing was, were they going to stay healthy? And when they came out of spring training, you know, everybody intact, you know, there was, I had a feeling there was a good chance they could get off to a pretty good start, and that's what this rotation has done. I mean, the bullpen has had their lapses that have been a little bit surprising, but I think the rotation has been better than what a lot of people expected, not realizing how good they once were.
Yeah, and that provides a good segue to just talking a little bit about Yu Darvish. He could have his first rehab start within less than a week, which is just the first step toward getting back. It's not like they're accelerating things. He's still due back mid to late May, has another batting practice session. But the important thing is that he's still on schedule and he's not having any kind of issues as he's moving forward, staying on schedule. And I guess that's the most important thing right now.
Yeah, the Rangers are thrilled with how this whole thing has gone. Every batting practice he's thrown, or every bullpen session he's thrown, Doug Brokel has been, you know, giddy about what they've seen, and Jeff Benison has been optimistic, and Darvish, when he's deigned to talk, has been very optimistic. So far, so good. You know, he's got to go face some hitters and got to face the likes of, you know, Corpus Christi or Oklahoma City or, you know, Northwest, Southeast, Central Arkansas. But, you know, he's got to go out and pitch about 4 to 6 rehab games, and once he gets those done, then, you know, he'll be back in the rotation.
Greg, I found our colleague Anthony Kastrovich wrote a really interesting story about Edgar Martinez, who is the hitting coach, and that he's embracing this role, and it's much different times now that we're in than when he was a player, where they are breaking everything down. And that's what I think is interesting. I did a study on this a couple of years ago. I talked to a lot of people about can great hitters become great hitting coaches, and the answer is depends on who the guy is. Some that had wonderful success as hitters can't really be that hitting coach because they can't identify with the guy that struggles. What makes Edgar Martinez a good hitting coach, assuming that he is and he seems to be?
Yeah, it's interesting, and you're right, Allison. It's a pretty common theme in all sports, really, that the guys who are natural athletes, you know, aren't always great coaches because they do it naturally. They don't always, you know, think things through as much as a coach will, but Edgar has done very well in that role, and I think for one reason, which is he communicates very well, and he always, even as a player, I remember when they hired him as a hitting coach, talking to Willie Bloomquist and some of the other guys who were still around who had played with Edgar, and the first thing they said was he's going to be good because as a player they would go to him and he would see things and just had that keen eye and an ability to watch opposing pitchers and really study situations and able to communicate that and you know what to look for in different situations and really a mental approach, a mental hitter at the plate, and you know, thinking ahead of a pitcher. You know, it's funny, somebody was just telling the story the other day that Edgar one time was at the plate in a I don't know 0-2 count or something, took a pitch right down the middle and didn't swing at it and went back to the, later said that wasn't my mistake. That he threw the wrong pitch in that situation. You know, he was thinking ahead, and he thought the pitcher hadn't thrown the right pitch to him, and he was ready for something else. But you know, he was just that guy, and I think he's imparting that a lot to the young hitters, and kind of how to get ready for situations and prepare things. And as you mentioned, Anthony did a great columnist. As Anthony is an excellent columnist for here at MLB.com, and a piece talking to Edgar about you know, when Edgar played, he didn't like to focus so much on all the, you know, some of the video and things that's so prevalent now, and some of the statistics, and feels you can kind of get overwhelmed at times. So, you know, really, you know, clearing the mind once you get up to the plate is key. But these guys do use a lot of preparation. We've got the iPads in the dugouts now that Edgar and others are using to get ahead on you know, pitchers they're going to face and what they throw, and you know, all the numbers are there. So it is an interesting blend. And Edgar, just to me, one of the great figures in Mariners history, you know, really a welcome part of this team, and by the fans and the players and the coaches alike. It's been great to have him aboard here for the last year.
I think that's the most interesting part, is that he was saying when he was a player that it was, you didn't want really all this information, because you wanted, like you said, wanted to be able to keep your head clear, and it was like too much that's clogging it up. And now it's sort of his job, I guess, to filter that out. So part of his job is to be looking at every single thing he possibly can on all of these guys, and then knowing what information to pass on to them without overwhelming them. So that would seem like you really have to have a special talent for that, and not anybody can just come in and do that.
Yeah, I don't think it's easy, and I think every hitter is different too. You know, some guys want as much information as they can get. You know, there are others who, you know, flat out said, "Hey, I don't want all that. I've got, you know, a couple thousand bats in the big leagues. I don't need to, you know, look at the iPad a moment before I run out to the plate. You know, keep my mind clear, and then let me just be myself." And these guys are pretty good about, you know, respecting, you know, Scott Service's message from the day he got here was, you know, be yourself. You know, you tell us what works for you, and you know, we'll make that work. And I think Edgar's pretty good at adjusting as well with different guys and their approaches. But it's a learning process, and Edgar is new at the job himself. You know, he started in midseason last year, and will be the first to admit that, you know, he's learning how to be a coach as well.
So let's move on to talk a little Mike Zunino. So I think this is an interesting storyline, just because, and I think I was talking to you about it a couple of years ago, because they didn't really know, like they kind of rushed him, and they realized that they were rushing him. He was their first pick in 2012, which was not that long ago. And he never really put it together at the plate. And they just kept like trying to figure out, and correct me if I'm wrong, trying to figure out if it was like worth just keeping him up there and hoping that it didn't mess him up too much, like the failures at the plate, while developing his skills behind the plate, which were very good. And it seems like they have like a different kind of plan for him now with the new front office, and he is a AAA raking right now. So is that kind of where they're changing their philosophy on him a little bit?
Yeah, no question. You know, the new regime, you know, felt he was rushed, and it's hard to argue with that. You know, everybody, you know, loves what this kid can do behind the plate, and I think everybody thinks, at least most people think he can be a pretty good hitter from what he did in college, and the reason he was the number 3 overall pick in the draft. There's a lot there to like, and a great kid and hard worker. But it, you know, it just didn't happen at the plate. You know, he hit for some power, but his batting average and on base were you know, way below what they needed and what he wanted and all those things. So, you know, they said, hey, let's send him down to AAA. Let's give him the time that he didn't get when he was rushed. Let's give him a year down there if he needs it. Let's give him, you know, whatever months it takes for him to just really get an approach and a plan that will, when they bring him back up, he's going to be ready, and it's not a case where we're yo-yoing back and forth between AAA and the majors trying to get him comfortable. He needs to stay down there for a while, and which has made an interesting start here to the season. Now, since you point, he's killing it in AAA Tacoma, and 6 homers in 5 games stretch, hitting over 400 and just doing everything you'd want. But, you know, Scott Service yesterday saying, hey, you know, we have to stick with our plan with this guy. You know, the process, he needs to get comfortable. We just can't rush him back up here. And that's certainly a decision made easier by the fact that Chris Iannetta playing very well up here at the major league level. So, you know, as long as Iannetta stays healthy, they have no reason to rush Zunino back up here, you know, even in a backup role where he'd only get, you know, sparing time. I think they want to let him play. They want to really let him develop that overall game that will benefit them in the long term with this guy. And he remains a big part of the future, but they want it to be on, you know, full stock and ready to go and be the guy they expect.
Yeah, and it's not just like sending him down and letting him develop there. It's and that's the hard part, is when you're assessing somebody and they're at the major league level. And, I mean, we're talking about a 193 batting average over 295 games, so that's not a small sample over right. the course of three seasons. And the worry for a front office is that, are we letting this kid bury himself to the point where mentally he's not going to be able to have success at this level because this is kind of in his head, and now he's so screwed up. You know, as the Yogi Berra saying goes, that the game is like, you know, 90% mental, whatever, but mm-hmm. it's so true. And I guess it kind of surprises me that it took that long for them to say, you know, at no point they said, wait a second, we might be doing more damage to this kid for his career than it's worth, and let's send him down now.
I mean, I think it speaks to where they were and just didn't have other great options and really thought this kid would fight through it. And, you know, he hit, you know, a fair number of home runs and things. You look at his power numbers were pretty good. So, you know, they kind of lived with it for a year. And you know, it wasn't until, you know, midway through last year, in fact, ironically, the day Jack Cerenzi was fired was the day Jack had already decided to send him down. And that's the way that worked out. So he went down for the last month last year in AAA. And they, you know, when the new group came in, they said, hey, let's go out and get some catchers. They went out and got Iannetta and Steve Clevenger. So to give this kid a break and let's let him develop his game, and we'll be okay at the major leagues for this year and see where he's at going forward.
Alden, my favorite topic, Hector Santiago, who, you know, I adore.
Yes.
So, yes. Oh, my God, what a great start he just had. And his velocity is rising, and you had this great story about him, so I want to talk about that. Are things starting to come together? I know that they've been high on him the whole time he's been with the Angels, but we're still kind of waiting for him to just be that dominant guy. And are things coming together in that way?
Well, it seems like it, Allison. And, you know, he did have a great first half last year. He rode that first half into getting invited to the All-Star game. And then the second half kind of, you know, that strand rate kind of caught up to him and he gave up a little bit more runs. And he kind of, at the end of the day, ended up with a bad second half that kind of made his year, although solid, it wasn't as extraordinary as it was looking for those first 3 months of the season. You know, we'll see. You know, you got to let these things play out a little bit. But, you know, one element about the way that Hector's starting off now compared to last year is what you mentioned earlier, is his velocity is up, and it is consistently up. This is a guy who was throwing 92, 91, average just slightly below 91 miles an hour on his four-seam fastball last year. Yesterday, against the White Sox, while throwing seven scoreless innings, he struck out a career-high tying 10 batters, and he just had such easy velocity. He hit 95 miles per hour and above 10 times, and he was just basically sitting 93, 94, 95 miles an hour the entire night. He hasn't been able to do that, Allison, since he was a reliever, and as you know, when you're a reliever, you come in, you pitch an inning, you pitch maybe two innings tops, and you could go max effort. When you're a starting pitcher, you got to worry about turning a lineup over, facing guys two, three separate times. You can't really throw that hard. Hector's throwing as hard now as a starter as he did when he was a reliever. And, you know, his fastball looks so good that, I mean, yesterday I think he threw 106 pitches. 81 of those pitches were fastballs. The White Sox could not catch up to it. They were swinging below it, and they couldn't figure it out, so he just kept attacking guys with his fastball. It was responsible for 9 out of his 10 strikeouts, and I mean, if he can maintain that velocity, this could be a completely different Hector. It could be a completely different year. I know it's still very early, and it's hard to say things so definitively at this point in the year, but that velocity, that's going to play. That could make him a different guy.
Yeah, and that has to be, I mean, of course, like we said, it's very early. But given the challenges that this rotation may face this season, this is huge for him to be able to contribute way more than he has in the past. I mean, he's a guy that they have marked in pen to be in the rotation. There weren't any issues there. But to be able to be an anchor like that, I mean, that could really change the look of what goes on with the team this year.
Yeah, and they need it, Allison. They need it really badly. And this is a guy who came into spring training not even knowing if he was going to have a spot in the rotation. They thought maybe that he was going to be in the bullpen because they had 8 guys. And, you know, as we talked about before, that depth is quickly eroded. You know, Jared Weaver, they're not really sure what they can get out of him from start to start. Garrett Richards is their anchor. But outside of him, you know, you got Andrew Heaney dealing with a forearm injury. Tatis Skaggs is still, you know, easing his way back from Tommy John surgery. C.J. Wilson isn't playing catch beyond 60 feet right now. They need somebody else to step up, and, you know, Hector's been doing it for them. And you know what? They really needed it yesterday, not just because they needed a win on Monday, but because their bullpen had been gassed. Their bullpen was responsible for six innings on Sunday, threw 11 and two-thirds innings while getting swept in Minneapolis, and didn't really bring any relievers up. They needed him to save the bullpen, and he did. That's what kind of top-of-the-rotation guys do, and that's what Hector did.
Yeah, that's a good segue into our next topic, which is the seventh inning seems to be, the relief role seems to be undefined, which I find strange. So maybe you can explain to us, there seems to be like four guys that can move in and out of that role. Why is it undefined, and do you expect that to be more solidified as time goes on?
Well, it's not defined because nobody's really stepped up. And, you know, you're not going to really force somebody to be your sole seventh inning reliever if they're not really having success yet. So what Mike Socha is doing is kind of just matching up. He's got two lefties and Jose Alvarez and Greg Molly, and he's got two righties and Fernando Salas and Mike Marin. And, you know, he's just kind of trying to piecemeal it together to kind of get the ball to Joe Smith and Houston Street. And Allison, I think, you know, it doesn't get talked about too much, you know, the seventh inning role, but I feel like what separates the good bullpens from the great bullpens are the ones that have three go-to relievers. They have their closer, they have their setup guy, and they have their seventh inning guy who kind of gets the ball to them. And the Angels have Joe Smith and Houston Street, and, you know, recent struggles aside, you could count on them. And they've been searching for that third reliever ever since the start of last season. When they got Houston Street in July of 2014, they already had Joe Smith. And bringing in Houston Street kind of forced Kevin Jepsen into that seventh-inning role. And that's when the Angels' bullpen became a shutdown bullpen for the last 2 months of 2014. They rode it to a major league leading 98 wins that year. And ever since then, they've been looking for that third-best reliever. You know, coming out of camp, it looked like Mike Marin would be that guy. He could still be that guy, but he's gotten hit around a little bit early. So, for the meantime, Socha has to match up.
Okay, this rotation thing. In the first 14 games, five quality starts. That's not going to quite get it done over the course of the season. So how worried should we be here in Houston, and what do you think can happen for this to be rectified?
Yeah, the starters are going to have to find a way to go deeper into games. There's no doubt about that. Two of those quality starts are by Dallas Keuchel, and then three other guys have won. So as of right now, you just kind of keep running the same guys out there, and you hope that you know, they can figure out a way to be more efficient and get through first innings without throwing 41 pitches like Scott Feldman did on Tuesday in Arlington. But you know, the fact that Lance McCullers is still a couple of weeks away, you know, it's a little bit of a problem. But they're just going to have to find a way to be more efficient, and because the bullpen now is racking up the innings. They have tied for the third most innings in the American League, and you know, if you do that for too long, you're going to wear some guys out. So, you know, it's going to start Wednesday. They need Pfister to go deeper than he's done, and then they have Keuchel on Thursday, and then maybe when they come home, they can turn it around a little bit on the mound.
Yeah, like you said, with the bullpen being affected, I mean, that's really where the bulk of the damage can be done. I mean, clearly, if you don't have a rotation that's going to be able to go far into a single game, and that will equate to a lot of losses. Then you have to start interchanging guys in and out from the minor leagues up, and, you know, and just trying to keep guys fresh. And that's not even anticipating the inevitable extra inning games that certainly every team has, a handful of those every year. So they really have to stop the bleeding before it starts. But there's not a lot of – it just seems like there's not a ton of options or depth should anything really go wrong with this group.
Yeah, it's, you know, they have what they have, and, you know, all these guys have recent track records of performing pretty well, so they're just going to have to, you know, hope that they can figure it out. I know Brent Strom is working hard to try to get that done, and he's one of the best pitching coaches around. So, you know, it's still early, it's 14 games, but certainly having a bullpen tired in June or July can cause big issues.
Yeah. So let's talk about Lance McCullers. So he's there in Arlington. He threw a bullpen. That's encouraging. So, because he's been, I don't want to say he's not shut down, but just delayed in his return back to the rotation. So is he not feeling any effects from sort of that fatigue that was bothering him?
Yeah, so far so good. You know, it's the day after he throws where you have to really judge how he's doing, and we'll find that out today when we talk to him. But so far he's thrown a couple times now, and I suspect that he'll probably go out in a minor league rehab here within maybe the next week or so, which will be a good step forward.
Yeah. So on the offensive side, they've been hitting. I mean, the one thing that they are doing is hitting the ball, and it's good to see Springer and Altuve. I'll start with Springer because they really need his bat to be doing what he's been doing in the last several days, which is just he's really been become the player that the team has been kind of waiting for a little bit. But to see him have a power surge and to really hold his own offensively, that's going to be nice for the team.
Yeah, you know, they – you know, he's heating up, and, you know, Gomez got his first RBI. I mean, they're going to need Altuve, Springer at the top of that order to do damage. And Altuve's been doing all year. Now that Springer's going pretty well after a rough couple of weeks, it's a really good sign. And so now they need the other guys to heat up. Tyler Wright's cooled off a bit. Gomez, you mentioned, Gattis has still got a few games under his belt. So, you know, once all these guys click, I think it's a potent offense. So far, it's been spotty so far.
And with Altuve, where is his power coming from? I mean, he's always been a guy that we thought could knock a few out of the park every year. He's got like 5 home runs in the first 14 games. So it's hard to say like what he's doing. It doesn't look like he's doing anything differently. He just looks like such a smart hitter, and he just has such a good idea of what he's doing when he gets up to that plate.
Yeah, AJ Hinch said yesterday that he's kind of getting older and stronger, maybe growing into his power. Weird as that sounds, but you know, when he doesn't lunge out, doesn't try to do too much, and he stays back, he's got power. I mean, 5 home runs, didn't get that from base hit these last year. It's tape measure homers, so it's right field power the other day. So I don't think he can keep up the pace he's doing now, but certainly hitting the ball for all fields is a great sign.